He acknowledges Archimedes' lever, Copernicus' constants, Galileo's acceleration, Newton's motions, Faraday's coil, Bacon's prerogatives, Edison's thermionics, Einstein's relativity, Franklin's static, Galvani's electrolysis, and Tesla's understanding of outer space, and the works of craftsmen like Fulton, Ford, and the Wright brothers, whose follies, foibles, and infernal machines would never, it was said, perform the fantasies that are now commonplace. Like Tesla, Carr desires that his inventions serve all humanity, not a privileged few. It is his wish that millions of individuals from all nations will have an opportunity to share in the development of the business as it unfolds. Aside from the fact that he is definitely opposed to any monopolistic practices, so common in big business, his corporate structure is not unlike that of other successful world producers. The basic design for all his business stationery, brochures, booklets, and so forth, is not only interesting and original, but extremely symbolic. His initials, OTC, are arranged so as to form the sign of Omega. Surmounting this is the white dove, Tesla's dove, in full, graceful flight. Below is the motto which reads, "Peace and plenty through the application of free energy to supply all things to all people." Carr has already met the same resistance from the forces of darkness that plagued Tesla, and, as usual, it comes through money channels and threats of economic boycott. This time in relation to newspaper advertising. In launching an announcement of his inventions, Carr had a full-page advertisement prepared for insertion in a leading daily paper of Baltimore. The advertisement was paid for and accepted by the paper. Shortly thereafter it was cancelled by the newspaper and the money refunded. The newspaper had to cancel the advertising at the request of one of their big money spenders who had meted power, not free energy, for sale to the public. Therefore, the people of Baltimore and vicinity were not even privileged to know that one of their own citizens had invented free energy devices capable of powering everything from a hearing aid to a spaceship. While the governments still deny the existence of flying saucers, and daily newspapers refuse to give outstanding news to their readers in the form of a paid advertisement, the uninformed public remains uninformed. They do not even know that the problem of space flight has been solved on this planet by an American citizen. They are not even told that it is now possible to power everything with free energy drawn from the atmosphere, that we need no longer be enslaved by petroleum, coal and old forms of fuel. This is news of world importance, yet so strict is the gangster censorship imposed by the Silence Group, that newspapers founded for the purpose of giving news to the public dare not carry out their function. To do so would mean running the risk of ruinous economic sanctions. However, Carr and his associates displayed no resentment over the refusal of the daily newspaper to carry the advertising. Instead, they placed page ads in small suburban weeklies which were overjoyed to have the sudden business windfall. The result was not only amazing, but proved conclusively that the public wanted to be informed about Carr's inventions. From far and wide, letters of inquiry began to pour in. Hundreds of extra copies of the newspapers were requested to be sent to relatives and friends in distant states and countries. Request for literature on the Carr machines reached huge proportions, and continued to soar day after day. Scores of people sent in small amounts of money, from $1 to $5, as a down payment on stock that was not even offered for sale. Visitors began to arrive with requests for information on everything from vast power plants to spaceships. Meanwhile, Carr had offered to build and deliver spaceships to governments wishing to send expeditions to the moon or elsewhere, but these offers were declined in favor of much more expensive rocket and missile programs. This is a most interesting and intriguing development. The space people have stated that they will not permit military or tourist landings on the moon. The hierarchy has announced that no individual in an unascended body can make a trip into outer space. If governments do not believe in the existence of flying saucers from outer space, then they cannot accept the fact that the space people have a station on the moon. Why, then, do they hesitate to use a Carr spaceship to go to the moon, and find out for themselves what is up there. It seems obvious that they do know there is a space station on the Moon. Undoubtedly, the space people have told them that they will not be permitted to land, and they know the space people mean business. In the meantime, they can keep on playing with their rocket toys in order to fool the taxpayer, and give the impression that he is getting something big and grand for his money. Car is not planning to have a large spaceship ready for flight for at least a year. It is quite possible that he could make a trip to the Moon and be permitted to land there. Inasmuch as he would be testing his own ship, the trip would have no military significance, and he is entirely in accord with the program set up by the space people. Also, by the time he has a ship of sufficient size ready for a voyage into outer space, it might be possible for him to make that trip too, especially if one or more space persons would agree to accompany him. But these conjectures are entirely unique and apply only to Carr. What he can or cannot accomplish has nothing to do with the attitude of governments which first refused to admit the possibility of spaceships from other planets and then refused to try out a local model. Supposing it is not entirely successful on the trial run, it certainly could not be less successful than many of the rockets and satellites which the government is attempting to launch at the expense of the taxpayers. Page 235. Furthermore, a rocket leads but to destruction. A spaceship leads to the freedom of the cosmic lightways and opens a vast new universe to the wonderment of man. Since Carr's free energy devices are designed to power anything from a hearing aid to a spaceship, it is clear why his advertising is refused by daily newspapers, and why the government refuses to even try a Carr spaceship on the national budget. Just for size, at least, Carr's free energy motors will power automobiles. For one thing, a development which would do away with the need for gasoline, and as an added advantage, do away with smelly exhaust fumes. For years, geologists and scientists have been bemoaning the fact that our natural fuels such as petroleum will soon be exhausted. They have painted grim word pictures of a shivering, stranded populace, hovering over a meager fire of sticks and twigs, and just about to perish for lack of fuel. Yet when Otis T. Carr announces free energy motors, the newspapers hasten to keep the whole thing hush-hush lest the people find out that they will not have to shiver after all. There is still another reason why the Silence Group, operating through black disciples in the military and commercial business arenas, has decreed that Carr's inventions should be played down. Carr is obviously working on behalf of the forces of light, and he is probably the first man in history who has had the courage to incorporate that theme in his paid newspaper advertising. He is irrevocably against mistreatment of the atom, for well he knows that an atom is God's handiwork, and a tiny pulsing life. In the advertisement he states that his machines are natural machines, that they produce unlimited energy without fission, without fusion, and without violence of any kind. They do not smash the atom. They do not split the atom. They do not blast the atom. He reminds his readers that his machines are profoundly simple devices that collect and direct the free and boundless energies of the sun in the same way the sun's energies cause the earth to spin and the rivers to flow, the bread to rise and the plants to grow, and the great ocean tides to rise and fall. He states that the accumulator uses the sun's force of electromagnetism by means of natural reproductive chemistry, and that the motor is powered entirely by the sun's immutable pressure energy known as gravity. He sums up not only his method but his philosophy as follows. All energy is atomic: the light from the sun, the pull of gravity, the fission of uranium, the fusion of hydrogen, all that moves or grows, or glows everywhere on Earth and throughout the universe. It is all atomic energy. Its eutronic presence is everywhere, being even nature itself. And held in plain view for all the time we know, it has yet remained nature's closest secret. So, how to borrow of this energy from nature, has been quite a problem. When you fight nature, nature always fights back. If we try to share nature's energy by injuring nature, we will only injure ourselves accordingly. Try to change the weather in one place and you get storms, or floods, or drought in another. Crack or split the atom and you get frightful devastation or poisonous radiation. And while you may blast a dog or a man away into space, you will never safely blast him back again. We know the laws of nature do not change, so why waste the effort and take the terrible risks? There is only one right way. The right way is the peaceful way. And we have found the way. CAR's architectural plans for a space research institute to be located at Space, Maryland, have been drawn up, and preliminary construction activities are underway on a beautiful plot of land of about 70 acres, outside Baltimore. The new post office will be called Space. Space Research Institute is expected to become the world center for activities connected with spaceships, interplanetary travel, interplanetary communication, and a better way of life through the utilization of natural solar energy devices. Page 238. The group of buildings incorporate new design motifs which should make them outstanding in architectural beauty. The plans call for a huge, domed auditorium. The interior of the dome will be decorated by Salvador Dali, who is currently preparing a huge mural masterpiece to be enshrined there. The subject is the prophetic story of Ezekiel's vision, approached from the space-time cosmogony. A total space concept is portrayed by four guardian cherubim. And over all hovers a portrait of the White Dove of Shambhala, Tesla's Earth companion. Although Space Research Institute will serve as headquarters for the Otis T.Car Enterprises, he does not plan to mass manufacture any of his devices. The Institute, as its name implies, is strictly for research. There the group will design prototypes of machines which will then be turned over to other manufacturers to be produced in quantity. Mr. Carr has behind him the long history of Tesla's frustrated attempts to make the world a more comfortable place in which to live, and to give humanity countless hours of leisure time for study and evolutionary advancement. Therefore, his primary interest is not in becoming a manufacturer himself, but in the opportunity of all industry, the world over, to share in the ownership and distribution of products patterned after the basic prototypes. Since Carr is a disciple of Tesla, and since Tesla refused to participate in the conniving, competitive commercial manipulations of his day, businessmen everywhere are eager to know how Carr, faced with problems almost identical to those of Tesla, plans to surmount the many obstacles which are certain to be placed in his way by the forces of darkness. The answer seems to be contained within the unilateral functions of the inventions themselves. Once the public knows that the devices will provide a better way of life, it is up to the public to demand that the inventions be made available. The OTC circular foil spacecraft looks and operates like a flying saucer. The first experimental models will be anywhere from 40 to 100 feet in diameter, and will cost millions of dollars, as do first prototypes of any aircraft. However, one small model, 10 feet in diameter, will be constructed for special tests purposes in actual usage. Unlike conventional aircraft, the large space vehicles will soon be brought down to family size of about 10 feet in diameter. They can be built to sell for less than the cost of a modern automobile, and are designed to take a family across town, across the nation, or around the world in absolute comfort and safety, and in a fraction of the time ever before possible. Carr expects to be ready during 1959 to start licensing manufacturers all over the world to mass-produce the OTC space vehicles in many sizes and styles for every transportation need. It is Mr. Carr's sincere opinion that the introduction, manufacture, and use of the free energy devices will bring more prosperity to more people in the United States and around the globe than any single invention in the entire history of the world. He realizes that most of the world's problems today have their roots in hunger for more energy than is available. States and nations are already fighting over what is left of ordinary fuels and the available supplies of water to make electricity and irrigate the land, states Mr. Carr. We have had many recent examples of our delicate balance of supply and demand, even in this great country. We've seen their rationing of gasoline and oil. We've seen the lights go dim in the Pacific Northwest. We've seen vast millions of burning desert acres barren only for lack of a little irrigation. And now even the oil men are beginning to squeeze the last drop out of every ton of shale. The power hunger is the same the world over, only it is more intense now. The most shocking recent example was the willingness of Egypt to close the Suez Canal and fight the world for a few kilowatts of electricity. Free energy devices can change all this in a remarkably short space of time. Enough electric power and energy in the right places, and we will have undreamed of markets for every other kind of goods and materials and appliances our factories and shops can turn out. And so goes the simple formula: give the world enough electrical energy, and you raise the world's standard of living. Raise the world's standard of living, and you raise the world's economy. The best way to get the total concept of what free energy means to the world today is to suppose that the wheel were just now being discovered. Then visualize the free energy motor putting the wheel into the air, into an entirely new dimension. Industry must realize that these devices will provide power for automobiles, trains, great ocean liners, and spaceships, as well as for such things as hearing aids, portable television sets, refrigerators, and will even furnish power, light, and heat for large cities or communities. Our free energy devices will do all these things by perpetual space forces of magnetism, gravity, and electromagnetism. And these forces alone, forces which are free and available everywhere on the face of the earth and throughout the universe, while the world is still groveling under the ancient edicts that called for earning one's bread by the sweat of one's brow, the question of how free energy devices will affect employment is a paramount one. But Mr. Carr feels that his inventions and discoveries truly represent the inception of a basic new industry, which for sheer size and scope might be properly compared with the steel, automobile and aircraft industries combined. He believes that pioneering in a free energy will automatically introduce a new concept of employment practices and employee relationships. Although the space people themselves have had no contact with Otis T. Carr and have had no direct hand in his work, it is safe to assume that they have been watching it carefully. In addition, Tesla and the Dove have assuredly directed it from the scientific department of Shambhala, making certain that it will fit into the divine plan at exactly the right moment. This, then, is the right moment. The grave danger that might have turned the entire enterprise into a gargantuan war machine is now over, for with the straightening of the Earth's axis completed, the hierarchy and the space people will be able to neutralize major war efforts. There may be sporadic minor clashes, but even these may now be avoided. Lord Michael, Prince of the Archangels, has had such tremendous success in his house cleaning efforts, that the final physical plane adjustments are not likely to be too formidable. It was that keen observer of nature, now the ascended Master Saint Germain, who, in a former embodiment as Francis Bacon, set the stage for the new civilization which he is building today. His basic plan for mankind was revealed in a simple prefatory remark in Novum Organum: if man would conquer nature, man must join with nature. Francis Bacon is an outstanding example of a man who successfully refused, through 70,000 years as a civilization builder, to fight against nature. As a result of this simple cooperative method, the floodgates of wisdom remained open to him. This resolute leader of humanity could look back down the corridors of the centuries with full continuity of consciousness, and review the events which had carried the whole human race to the threshold of the Aquarian Age. Transmutation is the keynote of the Aquarian program for mankind. Any effort which man now makes to join nature helps to lift some of the heavy karma he has created by fighting nature in the past. Otis T. Carr has recognized the true responsive nature of the atom when it is treated as an intelligence. Essentially, what we have done is collect, arrange, adapt and orchestrate some of nature's compositions into harmonious assemblage, he explains. They are fashioned out of God's creation, they are instruments of peace. Their music is for all the worlds of man. We have come very, very far into the light since the dark, uncertain days of 1955, when it seemed that the worst cataclysmic prophecies of Armageddon were about to be fulfilled. As Arthur H. Matthews so joyfully states, "Be of good courage, for we have God with us. And we have the spirit of Tesla with us." Yes, indeed we have. All this, and the white dove, too. We seem to hear the gentle rustle of white wings around us, we seem to hear the gentle voice of Niccolo enfolding us, comforting us, assuring us that he still walks beside the one who was obedient to his command, "Go forth. Explore space. Therein the limitless as your skies is your rendezvous with destiny." The sea. The interminable sea. Rolls on, a fluid portion of eternity. Wisdom. Interminable wisdom. Rolls on to mark the course of eternity. Jewels dropped at random are found, and their richness recognized by children of eternity, and such children walk among the masses, unrecognized for a time. Many of your years past a gem was dropped and found and clasped close by a youth, whom you now know. He is much loved here. And I send him again a word, to lead him home. He knows me well and those who remember me, gently, call me Nick. Good night. Part 9. On one occasion Tesla was presented with a medal, a symbol of gratitude, together with a paraphrase of Pope's lines on Newton, "Nature and nature's laws lay hidden night you." God said, "Let Tesla be," and all was light. This was the Venusian, the Superman, who arrived on this earth in a spaceship, as a tiny baby, and who grew to maturity to fulfill his great mission. That of assisting ascended master Saint Germain to set up the machinery for the new scientific civilization that will lift the Aquarian Age to heights of glory. 2,000 years earlier, Saint Germain, then Joseph, watched over the babe Jesus, while a radiant space vehicle, the Star of Bethlehem, hovered above the stable. Few people on this planet today have any conception of the Herculean accomplishments of Tesla on behalf of the forces of light. But on other planets in this solar system and in systems beyond, the people are well aware that they can extend the hand of friendship to us now, in this year of 1958, because of the mighty works of Tesla. There are many Earth people who will feel, even now, that Tesla should have found a way to overcome the obstacles placed in his path by the forces of darkness, that he should have forced a showdown that would have thrust his inventions upon the world, regardless of the ignorance and ambitions of a petty-minded opposition. But like the spaceman that he was, Tesla knew that he could only encourage us, he could not force his light upon us, he could only respect our free will. He was aware that humanity was plagued by the forces of darkness. He well knew that people were unable to see the significance of his role as a light-bearer. He was never bitter, never disappointed, when people failed to appreciate his efforts. He would only smile his slow, sweet smile in response to compassionate friends who felt they must offer apologies for human arrogance, for human self-will, and then he would quote in answer a favorite stanza from Goethe's Faust, "The God that in my bosom lives can move my deepest inmost soul. Power to all my thoughts he gives, but outside he has no control." Well did Tesla know that each and every individual must find his own Christ center, must contact his own source. For the doctrine of vicarious atonement is a vicious one, an escapist's dream. Each must transmute his own misqualified energy, each must carve out and travel the razor-edged path to the one. Tesla's inventions can make the journey easier, as can those of his disciples, Matthews and Carr. But only God can say to each pilgrim on the path, "Here is my gift of violet fire. Accept it. Use it. Transmute your past mistakes. Put your lower worlds in order. Then come home to me." There are those who will dispute the advantages of Tesla's inventions, and present developments made by Matthews, Carr and others who follow in Tesla's footsteps, arguing that machinery has nothing to do with discipleship. There are those who will say that we must not use a mechanistic approach, such as the anti-war machine, in trying to solve our problems, that we must use only love and understanding. But this attitude stems from the dreadful devotism generated under the misused influence of the sixth ray. Jesus was a practical man who lived in the workaday world. He made his ascension by the application of scientific principles, which is the only method anyone can use. It is only the impractical mystic who views science as a handicap. It is quite true that if men and women of goodwill could generate a sufficient amount of love and understanding, the course of history could be changed at once, but the change would still come about scientifically. For the energies generated in this way are simply collected by angelic forces, acting as accumulators, and then poured into certain specified areas of atomic matter, freeing it from low karmic vibrations and raising its frequency so it can function with greater freedom. There is nothing mystical in the process. There is nothing mystical about an angel. When angels walked and talked with men, before the laggards came, they were accepted as a necessary adjunct to successful human evolution, as indeed they are. They are not any more mystical than trees, rocks, soil or rivers. They are not one whit more mystical than the pigeons in the park or Tesla's favorite dove. It is the dark forces who have conjured up that phony mystical story, so that people would feel that they had to be practical in the materialistic meaning of the word, and depend upon a job, a boss, a national ruler, a military machine, instead of simply depending upon God and his adepts and his angels. So let us not despise a mechanistic approach which will allow us to lay down our weapons, and give us the leisure time to develop the educated heart of love, the enlightened mind of understanding. As the ancient maxim advises, do not count the teeth of a camel which has been given to you with love, but ride it with thanks in your hearts that you have a vehicle which will carry you safely through the hazards of the desert. Remember, too, that Tesla's anti-war machine is simply a mechanistic version of the wall of light built by Saint Germain's disciples through directed and controlled thought. But with this difference, Saint Germain's wall of light must, like the hierarchs themselves, function without interfering with man's free will. It would not be occultly permissible for adepts or disciples to build a wall of light which would cause all bombs to explode, as Tesla's anti-war machine will do. By taking human embodiment, Tesla could overcome that occult fear to the extent that he could counter with his human free will the destructive weapons fashioned by other human free wills. That is why all adepts in ascended bodies have to work through disciples who are in physical incarnation. The disciple is perfectly free at all times to do or say anything, even when the word or deed may actually work against the forces of light. Of course, in that case the disciple must carry the burden of the resultant karma. But a master is not occultly permitted to warn the disciple against terrors. If he did so, he would interfere with the free will of the disciple, and deprive the disciple of learning through his own mistakes. A master working in the light never follows a disciple around, telling him what to do and what not to do. On the other hand, black adepts do nothing else, and they even enlist the aid of parents, teachers, doctors, newspaper writers and a thousand other tools to assist them in their nefarious practice of enslaving the human mind through dictatorship. This kind of tyranny exists in virtually every home today, and it is a well-known fact that the forces of darkness are especially proud of the inroads they have made in destroying family love and harmony. Masters of the ageless wisdom do not direct their disciples to follow certain lines of thought, or point out to them certain ideas which they should absorb. The disciple must at all times use his own discrimination, and must through his own efforts learn to handle only the type of energy which will increase his God powers. Over the years, many disciples have been sufficiently alert to apply ideas which they learned from Tesla, for disciples range far and wide in their search for the truth, striving to recognize it and greeting it with joy when they find it. The mystic or the devotee usually makes the mistake of searching for truth only in nice but innocuous books, respectable surroundings, and sanctimonious environments. Therefore, it has not occurred to many persons to look into the findings of an electrical scientist like Tesla, to confirm the truths put forward by ascended master Saint Germain. Page 249. One of the most interesting examples of alert searching has come to light in a story reported by L.C. Bullo, and published in Fade magazine in November, 1957. Mrs. Bullo had worked with the group of Saint Germain's disciples who originally built the protecting wall of light around North, Central and South America. Mrs. Bullough was well acquainted with the work of Tesla and, as she explains, in a portion of her article quoted below from Fate, she knew his ideas could be used in a thoroughly practical manner even by an individual. She then demonstrated this in many ways. She told the author that in experimenting with the Tesla methods, she found the techniques to be identical with those taught by Saint Germain and other hierarchs. When we lived in Illinois, we had a little toy terrier named Midgey. When Midgey was 9 months old, she was red for love. We were filled with consternation at the thought of all the dogs in the neighborhood congregating outside our door. What could we do? I was reminded of the scientist, Nikola Tesla. His scientific knowledge was four-dimensional,